Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 17th edition of Commodity Week. Harvest is in full swing, and the corn market is still headed higher. We'll ask why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group. Our panelists in studio today include Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson in Champaign, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Let's open with this question. Paul Cooley, as we were talking to our elevator folks throughout the week on the closing market report and as we checked in with other elevators, what we found was that farmers shucking corn were selling it across the scale in large quantities. The right or the wrong thing to do?
Unfortunately, somewhere along the line, somebody had a class that said, thou shall not pay elevator storage minimums. And of course, one of the problems is this, the storage costs are very high in a farmer's mind. Unfortunately, this is one year that it would have paid off in gold coins. And unfortunately, there's a tremendous carry out there. Flat price, they reached an objective and they sold it. They thought the yields would be there. And in some cases in soybeans, it is a home run. But as a general rule, this was a year to pay storage, no matter if you had to build $2.50 storage or pay the elevator 30 cents to January.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
I don't necessarily think it was a mistake. I think maybe a lot of that corn that's coming across is corn that was already paid or already booked, you know, and sold in advance, you know, and there's the big question. In going to all the meetings we've had, I can't tell you how many guys have come up and said they sold corn, you know, at $3.50, $3.60, $3.70, $4. And so I don't disagree with Paul. I do think that there was some really good reason to store, only if we could see it in a crystal ball, though. Because if you roll back a couple months, you couldn't tell that this was something that was really going to happen.
And Bill Gentry.
I guess at these value levels, thinking about just what the market's potential is and where we've come from, selling across the scale is probably not the worst thing you could do as long as you've got some flexibility to do some re-ownership, something along those lines. The value levels that we're looking at today are appreciably higher than what we were looking at 45 or 60 days ago, and rewarding the market with cash bushels is definitely a good thing to do.
This week in Chicago, corn futures finished like this. December is now the lead, and it had a 517 and a quarter top, a low at $4.76 and a quarter. Its settlement price Friday over Friday at $5.13 and a quarter was up 35 cents. Most of that gained on Friday. December of next year at $4.77 and three quarters, up 18 and a half cents on the week. Can we continue our counter-seasonal run and rally in the marketplace?
Yeah, it sure seems like it. And when we say seems like it, it shows every aspect of that to continue. And a couple of reasons why we think it is. Of course, Iowa is the big state where the votes have to come in, and we'd really love to see what the actual yields are out there. But our early yields on sudden death syndrome beans are disappointing. And in the good areas, the yields are same as they are last year. So that means the good voting precincts aren't making up for the bad yields. And I think the verdict is going to come in with a smaller yield than the 179 the government talked about. And it wouldn't surprise me to see the bean yields also under the 51 that the government talked about.
You think that the Western Corn Belt will have to
52.
It will have to pick up for where the Eastern Corn Belt has slacked off. Is it possible?
We don't seem to think so. I mean, we've really dug ourselves a pretty deep hole. We've gone basically all the way north of 70 now with a lot of good harvest and seeing the numbers. The good ground is struggling. Some of the more questionable ground is picking up some slack in areas. But I think the hole's too deep for the northern and western Corn Belt to fill in the void.
You agree with that?
Do I agree with that?
Do you agree that we're too deep now to let's see if we can define your hole here.
Sure.
So is the hole too deep to make the 163.5?
Well, we won't make 163.5.
Okay, that's what I want to know. Do you agree with that part?
I do
of
agree
it?
With that. There's no question about that. You know, I talked a while back about this field next door to our house, so we went out and did some cob counting in and everything else, and early on it was looking like it could be a 260. Well, it came off at 173. Is what it did. So there's a tremendous amount of cob abortion and everything else that went on in that field due to the heat. So I don't doubt that. The only wild card I think we have yet in the back pocket perhaps is the extra 600,000 acres we picked up out of Kansas. And Kansas has been doing very well on dry land corn. And, of course, the northern tier. But I'm just not certain that it can make up for everything we're probably going to lose down here.
Okay, so we had a discussion before we went on the air while we were in the couches in the lobby, and we talked about corn and wet feet. I had talked to my brother earlier in the day on Friday. His suggestion was that flat black land that was wet didn't yield nearly as well that which rolled and drained. So let me back that up, because then we come in with the difference between the eastern and the western Corn Belt, because we level out as we go to the east, generally speaking, until we get further into Ohio. And even then, that's a lot of land that's really flat, but everything else rolls. And yes.
I think another thing that we talked about a lot last year, but we haven't really taken into account, and I talked to guys this week, is compaction of the soil that we looked at for last fall. I do believe that that is having a serious impact on our yields.
Paul, what do you hear about it?
Well, the only thing that I'm worried about is that the government might come up with an extra million acres of corn and maybe some extra soybeans. The real factor here is that... The farmer, tried his best to get the most yield out of every bushel, but, there was too much heat. There was denitrification. I would imagine that there's really a hundred different reasons why the corn didn't yield the way it should, and I think the verdict is that there's very big disappointment in the Corn Belt. The grain trade realizes it. There's other major problems in the world, Canada, China, some dryness in South America, and it's in oil seeds. And it does seem like that the demand is there, and there's a lot of people short-bought in the marketplace yet.
We are moving very quickly through harvest here, but there is an awful lot of harvest yet to be done all across the nation. How positive are you about your number?
I'm fairly comfortable. We talked about 160 previously. I think right now it's very possible that we could drift a little bit below that. It's very difficult. I mean, we're going to have to see a lot more numbers before we can really pigeonhole it, but that's a concern. Going back to your compaction issue, too, we're finding a lot more guys, even this spring, that were trying to get the early start, working on ground that looked like it was right, actually encountered some compaction problems just a few inches below the soil surface, basically held the water at the top, didn't let the water get down, and ultimately caused the crop a lot of stress.
All right. Let's go back to numbers. So we're around a 160 here. Jackie Vakes?
No, I'm probably more in a 161.5 to 162. And I'll tell you why. It's because there are different things that you can do. You know, look at last year. We had 164.7. And all we've done is really lower the crop as we've moved through with residual numbers, usage numbers, and everything. I think that if you start looking at, like, say, let's look at 158.5. mm-hmm. and you pencil that out and you don't change demand at all, you leave everything where it is right now on the balance sheet, you go down to 792 million bushel carryout. You know, you're talking an extremely tight stocks-to-use ratio. You're talking a lot higher price than what we're looking at right now. And so I think, as always, we have to remember the USDA has a deviation on these reports. You know, and the deviation right now is one of the largest deviations in August that we've ever seen. So they're certainly uncertain. But at the same time, they have to be very careful. My concern is end users, and so many end users who really haven't gotten on the ball and covered themselves and now suddenly are panicking to do that.
I think Jackie's right that the market's probably trading a 161 or 2 crop, but it's probably less than that from the verdicts that we're getting in and the yield results. And I think that that's the thing that's scary, in my opinion, is, you know, the market is anticipating it the way that there's unrelenting price action on the upside. And the other factor is the farmers have geared up so much in their harvesting, and these elevators have also geared up, and they're swallowing this crop up just like a house of fire. And what happens once that crop is put away? You're going to see a lot of changes in the flat price, basis levels, carry, and you know, I'm sure that's going to change the perplexion and complexity of the market too.
Well, what do you think will happen?
Well, I think
what are the changes? Flat price does.
Flat price will improve with basis levels.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. I think it's interesting. I almost feel like our producers, our South American producers, right now sitting in the spring weather rally that we usually have, except we're sitting here in a harvest weather rally, because most of this rally that's going on is today at least was based on China frost and the potential mm-hmm. for more frost, Canadian frost, dry weather in Australia, all of those things. So all of us have had enough experience with these weather rallies to know that we have to be cautious.
On the producer side of this thing, what our expectations are, that especially the guys that come up short yield, especially really short on expectations, they're going to deliver in what they've contracted, and then they're going to put the rest of the way, close the door, and forget about it.
Let's take a look at some of the rest of the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on the week. Soybeans, a high this week at $10.72, a low at $10.22¾. Settlement price there up 38 at $10.69. November of next year at $10.56, up 34. We'll pick up the wheat futures as well. December 754.5 on its top, a bottom at 711.5. Settled Friday to Friday 2.5 higher at 739.25. Remember, we give you the high and the low for the week. Open outcry and pit trade overnight and day. July at 747.25, up 5.25. And we'll pick up the cattle futures too. Live cattle there, $100 on the high, the low at 97. Settled 99.40, up $2.25. Feeders at 111.82.5, up 12.5. And the lean hogs range 79.60 to 76.25. They're up 45 cents at the end of the week, Friday to Friday, at $77.70. So I've asked this a couple of times over the past week, and then while we were out on the ag panels, I know Dickey has asked it. I've asked it too. It doesn't look like there's anybody that's really going to blink in the way of usage at this point. How high is high in this kind of marketplace, in your opinion? And I want to go across the board. We'll start down here with Gentry first.
Biggest thing is, as far as how high is high, we've tried not to really set our sights real high, try to incrementalize the advance in corn and beans both. Corn, we started out thinking, well, once you get to 5, you can open the door to 5.25. That one's definitely in play. 5.5 is getting a lot of talking point. And I guess according to the scratch pad, you could probably put $6, but it's not something I would market towards. I would continue to reward the market with my bushels and then reown it and then hope for the best and hope the rally continues. The bean market right now, today's close above 1060 basis the November, is a pretty profound statement. It's probably the highest close we've seen in a couple of years. You've cleared resistance. Assuming you hold it next week, the door's open for an appreciable advance.
How high is high? That's always a really good question, Todd.
I think it's been a decade since I've asked that question. But where do we go?
Well, I think when you look at how high is high, what's the old adage? Low prices cure low prices, high prices cure high prices, right? I mean,
yes,
so you looked at export sales this week. We didn't do as well on export sales, but they ignored it. Okay. You know, it's one of those things that from a technical standpoint, you could certainly see, you know, 534, 576, 598 on December on a monthly chart. November beans, you could see 1079, 1142. I think it's going to be driven by the open interest continues to build right now. In other words, we still have new buyers coming into the market. How high is too high is when we begin to see some of the profit being taken and nobody coming back in.
I think the unfolding story is the problems in Canada and also China and also Russia to some extent. The market acts like it wants to go higher.
You've been listening to Commodity Week. This is the September 17th edition. Paul Cooley is in studio with us, along with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson and Bill Gentry. Bill is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette. We'll talk with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group when we return here in 2 minutes. By the way, you can listen to this program again anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. I know you're in the field. Let's give you a phone number for the closing mark report. You can pick up analysis very quickly at 10:15 and 3:15 daily at 217-333-3434.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Generally pleasant September weather continued this week across Illinois, with only a few short interruptions in harvest activities due to rain. The rain was very spotty this week across the state, and where it did not rain very much. Precipitation this week was less than 50% of normal. A frontal system moving through Illinois on Wednesday did kick off some showers, but rainfall amounts from these were generally less than a tenth of an inch, although parts of northeastern Illinois, south of Chicago, received from 1/4 to 1/2 inch of rain. This week was a little warmer than normal, with temperatures running 1 to 2 degrees above average. High temperatures rose well into the 80s Monday through Wednesday, with a few 90s in far southern Illinois. However, once the front came through on Wednesday night, daytime temperatures were back down to normal or below to finish out the week. Two frontal systems will affect Illinois next week, and both should bring the potential for some showers and perhaps a few scattered thunderstorms. The first will move through on Wednesday, and a second will possibly be entering Illinois on Friday. With the fairly quick passage of systems, we will see some day-to-day fluctuations in temperature. On the whole, though, temperatures will tend to be near to below normal north and above normal in the southern portions of Illinois. The system at the end of the week could bring us some rather cool weather for next weekend, but the jury is still out on that. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 17th day of September. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Bill Gentry, Paul Cooley, and Jackie Vakes. On the phone line with us today, Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Jerry. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon.
You sent to us very kindly a preview of the article that will show up in the October edition of Top Producer. You titled it Perfect Storm 2. Why?
Well, I think we've seen much of what you've talked about earlier is that there's a demand. It's not just a demand-driven market, but a supply-driven market as well, but I think more so a demand-driven market caused initially by the demand side from the former Soviet Union and Russia and that drop in feed wheat usage, and now we're seeing problems in Canada, and we froze last night in Canada, probably killing some canola. There's spring wheat in the field yet in Montana where it's snowing, and northwestern and western North Dakota, they've got some problems with quality, so that feed wheat quality stuff may not be as prevalent. I mean, the food wheat may not be as prevalent, so all that leads to a food side of things, and I think the world, we were very slow in coming to grips with that here in the United States, but I think the world came to grips with it real quickly, and we saw some huge, you know, export sales and so forth. And I think that's the much different situation than we had before. And I think I wrote an article in Top Producer a couple of years ago where I said, if we get into a food fight with energy, food's going to win. And I think this is what's happening. And if you notice, energy was weak today, or crude oil was. But it's much more serious when you have a food problem than when you have an energy problem. And it isn't just this year. It's also next year. And much of the things you've talked about this morning has been have to do with, are we going to have enough grain to get by and so forth? What are we going to do next year when we have to replenish these stocks around the world? And if another country, a major exporter or a major user, has a crop problem, and I think that's, being a futures market, that's what we're looking at in the future. And you look back today at today's prices, or $4 or $4.50, and you may say these may look awful cheap compared to what I may have to pay a year from now.
Jerry, glad that you're on the program, and you're very articulate, and I even smiled one time when you were on CNBC and they were trying to beat up on you supporting ethanol, the one great market the farmers have in the state of Illinois. But what can you do, and what can the farmers do out here to help market that good product and keep it alive through legislation?
Well, I think the one thing that we were slow at doing, and that's mentioning the fact that regardless of whether something is totally efficient or inefficient, there's a part of me that says maybe we burn more energy than what we produce, but nobody talks about the crude oil side of it and the kind of spills we've had to clean up, and maybe the people that have died for crude oil and so forth. But one thing about this is that we talk about stimulus and everything else, getting ourselves out of a problem, and we throw money at willy-nilly at things. This is a product that the profits stay in the United States. I don't care if it's 85 or 80% efficient. That's better than 100% of it going overseas. So every dollar you spend, you can spend the dollar creating jobs artificially, like we've supposedly been doing, or you can create something of it. And I think there lies the rub, is that it's kind of like aid-dependent children and food stamps. And we may not like it. We may think it's a waste. But 85% of it goes for good things, and so does ethanol. So I think that creates the jobs that we don't dare lose, and on those lines, I will be totally shocked if EPA says let's go with 15%. If I were president, I'd be leaning on them pretty hard, saying I don't want to be blamed for this food problem coming up down here. We can't afford to burn more food,
Well, and that leads right into what I wanted to ask you, Jerry. We've heard that the government has said, if there would be a drought, that they would suspend the ethanol mandate. What constitutes a drought in your mind? Is it a 500 million bushel carryout? Is it a 700 million bushel carryout?
Well, what's interesting is that Lynn Group came out today with another number, and they is one of the group that's respected somewhat, and I work with Gordy Lynn here, and I look at his numbers, and it's a bushel less, and I plug the numbers into my supply and demand, and we can't get along with 300 or 400 million bushels, and I think the 1 billion bushel mark is the carryover is about right, and I've heard say that it's 250 million bushels per week, and so if we need 4 weeks, there's your billion bushels. So we could probably get by a little less. Somehow we're going to have the carryout by the end of next year at this time, going into the first September, be somewhere around that 1.1 or 1.0 billion bushel crop. And right now, if I use the government's numbers and use this 160 or 161, I come up with something under 700 million, which can't be done. So what the USDA is going to do is they're going to say your carryover is going to be 1 billion, but you're going to use less in feed, you're going to use less in ethanol. And what I did this year is said, okay, I don't think we're going to use less in feed because we got some rotten corn yet that's going to turn up. The September 30th stocks report should show more feed disappearance again like it did in June. And we just had a cattle on feed report that says, well, we placed them. So I think it's going to have to come off the back of the exporter and off of the back of ethanol is going to either have to shut down somewhere along the line or curtail, come back, and what price will cause that. And I think, what do we have to do to get the carryover back to a billion bushels a year from now, so that when you carry that into the crop we're going to produce next year, you don't run out again. So we got a monumental task ahead of us, and it's more serious than I think we give it credit for, because you're not going to turn off the exports if they need it. It's not price sensitive necessarily when you're talking food. So now it's going to be a battle between probably the cattle feeders, who I've understand maybe have got a lot of grain bought. We think 50% of the grain bought for the next first two quarters of next year. So they're not totally in trouble. I don't know how we get there from here without taking grain. a lot higher, and that's what I kind of look at, is that at what point will my guy that buys my grain say uncle and give it up? And that's the point that I think we have to go to, and it's certainly probably $6 or more.
Well, that was my question was, we heard it from the countryside, how high is high. What does it seem like in Chicago? What is the high numbers that are being entertained up there?
I don't think they have a clue. I talk to guys, and one of the things I come up with is that at the Board of Trade and our traders in within the United States and maybe producers and advisors have come kicking and screaming into this crop that they can't believe it could be less, and I think it's a surprise to all of them, and I'm not sure that, you know, they'll look at charts or whatever, but there's nothing but air between here, you know, and almost 650, and it's, if you notice, when we, on the chart-wise, we did it in October of 2008 when we had a little bigger crop than we thought, and then we dropped 70-some cents in a week, so I think it's, you know, prices are determined by fundamentals, and if you look at that chart that's in that that's going to come out next month in Top Producer, it looks an awful lot like where we started in 2007 and 8.
Jerry, you've, on your weekend show, deal on DTN, you talk about the million acres more corn. Why didn't the USDA catch it? Is it in the was it the CRP acreage, and where would those acres show up at?
Well, I think, and I'm standing out here by myself because I farm in North Dakota, but I think when we're all said and done, I don't agree with Informa. They are using a million acres total prevent planting for both North and South Dakota. I've seen the numbers, I've seen the insurance claims for prevent planting, and I think it's a million, one or two in each of those states. So I am fearful that two things will happen. We're going to lose 500 million bushels or 500,000 acres of harvested ground, either by prevent planting or by the drowned out spots. And I'm not so sure as you're going to see much of an increase in bean acres. So I'm of the mind that come the October 12th that we, you know, if we need, if the bull needs to eat every day or every month, it'll probably get one on September 30th, and then again October 12th we'll find out we don't have the acres, and that's how we will keep that yield up to 160 to 61. We'll just do away with those 0 acres and so forth, and they're just mile after mile after mile of unplanted ground in not only North and South Dakota but Canada as well that I think they're underestimating.
When you sit back, you answered a bunch of questions I was just going to ask you, Jerry, because I wanted to ask you about the grain stocks report, and I will ask you a little bit about that. Do you think that we're going to see some adjustment again? Actually, it would be a reality adjustment to whether or not the USDA was off on the grain numbers for last year.
No, I think where we lost it is the fact that this grain, and we argue whether it's test weight. You know, a farmer talking about 56 pounds and takes it out, it's only 48, and he missed the calculation. I think it was more feed efficiency. I argued with Informa about this, and because back in January we said we could probably use 350 million to 400 million more bushels of corn just because of that, and I think we're slowly going to reach that. I think it just didn't feed well. A lot of feeders that we have as clients just said this stuff just doesn't work well, and I think that's the inefficient part of it. And I don't know if we'll ever prove whether it was test weight or just bad corn.
Jerry, thanks so much.
You bet.
Jerry Gahlke of the Gahlke Group here on Commodity Week. Time for a final word from our panelist in studio, Paul Cooley.
This marketing year is a world market, and we have to realize that.
Jackie Vakes.
Have a plan and control your emotion.
And Bill Gentry.
Yeah, control your emotion and sell value and reward rallies.
Again, thank you to all of our folks in studio. They include Bill Gentry, who you just heard. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois. Paul Cooley, of course, with us too. He's with ADM in Oakland, Illinois. This has been the 17th of September edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. You be safe during the harvest season.